Tonight we're going to finish the story of Joseph. So we find ourselves tonight in Genesis chapter 42. Now, if you're taking notes right now, I'm going to give you a few verses that are important to write down just so you can keep up with the timeline we're following. In Genesis chapter 37, verse 2, Joseph is 17 years old. Genesis chapter 37, verse 2. And from that point, we know he spends 30 years as a slave and as a prisoner, because we know in Genesis chapter 41, verse 46, Genesis chapter 41, verse 46, he is freed and serves Pharaoh as the second most powerful man in Egypt. Now, as of Genesis chapter 42 through 45, 9 years have passed, and we know that because in Genesis 45, 6, Genesis 45, verse 6, the famine has been in the land for 2 years. We know there were 7 years of prosperity and 7 years of famine. Now, only two of those years of famine have passed by, making that another 9 years. So what we know is that it has been 22 years since Joseph has seen his family. But through God and his providence, they're all going to be brought back together. So if you'll turn with me to Genesis chapter 42, and we're going to be covering more material than usual tonight. So we're going to be focusing on some passages and jumping around and summarizing others. So I hope you're able to follow along so we can keep up with things. In Genesis chapter 42, verses 1 through 2, we see the famine that was predicted by Joseph through the dreams of Pharaoh has struck also the land of Canaan. Not just Egypt is affected, but all the neighboring lands. Jacob hears that there is grain in the land of Egypt, so he sends his sons, at least 10 of his sons, to Egypt. Now, who is in Egypt? Joseph. Who is in charge of the grain? Joseph. So it is inevitable that they are going to meet. Now notice, of course, what happens in verse 4. Jacob keeps his favorite son, his youngest son, Benjamin, at home. Remember, when Joseph was living with his family, he was the favorite. But now the favoritism has moved from Joseph to Benjamin. Even though Benjamin is likely in his early 20s, if not his early 30s, Jacob still treats him as though he were a child and is overprotective of him. So let's look at verses 6 through 7. Now Joseph was the ruler of the land. He was the one who sold all to the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed to him and their faces to the ground. Joseph saw his brothers and he recognized them, but he disguised himself to them and spoke to them harshly. And he said to them, Where have you come from? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. Now, Joseph is in Egypt, minding his own business, doing his job and doing it well, providing grain for not just the Egyptians, but also for the neighboring countries. And as he's doing his job, minding his own business, he sees his brothers. And what do? They bow before him. Now, if you remember when we were in Genesis chapter 37, verses 5 through 11, Joseph had two unique dreams, the first of which he dreamed that he was collecting sheaves of grain with his brothers. And as they're collecting this grain, his grain stands up, and the grain of his brothers, the sheaves they were collecting, bows before his. In the other dream he dreamed that 11 stars were bowing down to him, representing his brothers. And his brothers were not dream interpreters, but they knew what these dreams clearly meant, that his brother would be above them. And this is what is being fulfilled now before Joseph's very eyes. Now, I can't imagine what Joseph is going through. Remember, he hasn't seen his brother in 22 years. And the last time he saw them, they threw him in a pit and then sold him to some Ishmaelite slave trader. Well, they were not slave traders, but they saw a bargain, and they picked him up and took him to Egypt. So we can imagine he is not too fond to see them. We also see that he speaks harshly to them. Now let's read verses 8 through 17. It's a big passage, but I think it's important to focus on. Verses 8 through 17. But Joseph had recognized his brothers, although they did not recognize him. Joseph remembered the dreams which he had about them and said to them, "You are spies. You have come to look at the undefended parts of our land." Then they said to him, "No, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants are not spies." Yet he said to them, "No, but you have come to look at the undefended parts of our land." But they said, "Your servants are 12 brothers in all, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no longer alive." Joseph said to them, "It is as I said, you are spies. By this you will be tested by the life of Pharaoh. You shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you that he may get your brother while you remain confined, that your words may be tested, whether there is truth in you. But if not, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." So he put them all together in prison for 3 days. Now, one of the things that initially sticks out to us is the fact that they do not recognize him. But Joseph clearly recognizes his brothers, and there are plenty of reasons for this. Remember, his brothers are still dressed like Hebrews. They still they still likely have their beards. Joseph is likely clean shaven. They're still dressed like they normally dressed. And when you're an adult, normally when you age, it doesn't change as dramatically as you do from when you go from a child to an adult. So it's not difficult for Joseph to recognize his brothers. But Joseph likely looks completely different. He is likely Egyptianized at this point. His clothes are likely different. He is likely smooth-shaven. He used to probably wear a beard. It is possible he's also wearing makeup. It was not uncommon for Egyptian men to wear that. He could be wearing a wig. As we see in verse 23, he's also speaking in a foreign language to them, likely Egyptian, which further throws them off, causing them to think that he is a foreigner. And with all these factors in play, we can understand why they do not recognize him at all. Another thing that sticks out to us is this: is the fact that he is very harsh to them, as we see in verses 7 through 9, and he accuses them of being spies. Now, spies have been used for thousands of years. What they would do, or what a nation would do, or a city-state, is they would send out spies to their enemies to find some weak part of their nation so they could attack. You might have a translation that says that that Joseph says to his brothers, they come to see the nakedness of the land. It refers to this idea of the uncovered parts, the weak spots of the land. That's why some translations talk about the undefended parts of the land. So being accused of a spy was not a good thing, because if people thought you were a spy, it's best to get rid of you unless you bring back information to their enemies. In fact, we still use spies today, although probably in a more intricate way. But when I read this story as a child, I didn't really understand what was going on. I figured Joseph was just being harsh to his brothers because, let's face it, they deserve it. They were very mean to him. It's not necessarily the Christian thing to do, but I thought maybe Joseph was just trying to get a little payback. But if we pay a close attention to what he does with his brothers and the questions he asks and the things that he asks for specifically, we understand exactly what he is doing. Parents know their children, and children also know their parents. Joseph likely knew that as soon as he left his home, the favoritism of his father would leave Joseph and go to his brother Benjamin, and that is exactly what happened. And he remembers very clearly what happened the last time there was a favorite in the family. It was him, and he was sold as a slave. So he asked questions, as we see throughout the story, continual questions about his brother and his father. He likely does not trust his brothers, and for good reason. They haven't shown themselves to be trustworthy. He doesn't know if Benjamin is being mistreated. He doesn't know if his father is being mistreated. So he's using this ploy or this idea of being as a spy, or them being spies, to make an excuse to probe them for information to find out how his family is doing. And so he really wants to see Benjamin. So he comes up with an idea to bring Benjamin to him. He says, "I'm going to lock you guys up, have one of you go and get your brother Benjamin. I can confirm your story." But really, what he really wants to do is make sure his brother is not being mistreated. As we see in verses 18 through 20, he has compassion on them. He doesn't want his family to go hungry. He doesn't want them to be mistreated. He only wants to keep one of them and send the rest home to take food to the family. Next time they want food, they can come back and bring Benjamin, and he can quote-unquote confirm the story and make sure Benjamin is being treated appropriately. Now, remember, Joseph understands their language. It was his first language. He understands what they're saying, but they do not realize it because he's speaking to them in a foreign language. So when they're having conversations with themselves, he hears and he understands it. Read with me verses 21 through 22. They said to one another, "Truly we are guilty concerning our brother, because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. Therefore, this distress has come upon us." Now, pay attention to what Reuben says in the next verse. Reuben answered them, saying, "Did I not tell you not to sin against the boy? And you would not listen. Now comes the reckoning for his blood." Now Joseph is hearing this entire conversation. And in verse 24, once he hears these words, he leaves. He begins to cry. He is overwhelmed by the idea that perhaps his brothers are now feeling sorry for what they have done. He is perhaps also overwhelmed by the idea that Reuben didn't turn against him. Nine of his other brothers did, but not Reuben. Reuben was there to try to stick up for him, to save him. And as we remember from Genesis 37, it was Reuben's plan to save him all along. But but unfortunately, he was too late. And so perhaps moved by the idea that they're both regretful and sorrowful, and the idea that Reuben was trying to save him, he is moved to tears. Now, notice what happens in verse 26. He wants to keep one as a hostage to ensure that they come back and he gets to check out Benjamin and make sure he's being treated okay. Now, he would normally take the oldest, but he takes Simeon instead because now he knows Reuben was the good one or the one who tried to save him. So he takes the next oldest, Simeon, instead. Now, as we see, he sends them back, and on their way, they of course realize that he has also been compassionate to them in the fact that he has given them their money. He has given them the grain for free, as we see in verses 24 and 25. And in verses 35 through 38, their father is really panicked because now he's not only lost one son, Joseph, he has lost Simeon as well. Now, chapter 43, we're going to be skipping around a little bit more because there's a lot to cover here. But basically, the famine continues, and of course, they run out of food. Now, Jacob realizes he needs to send his sons back to Egypt to get more food. And he also realizes that if he has to do that, he has to send Benjamin as well. Benjamin is his favorite son. Remember, his wife, the one woman he ever really tried to marry, remember the situation of Jacob. There was only one woman he truly loved, and that was Rachel. And that was the only one he ever wanted to marry, but he was tricked in marrying Leah as well. Rachel was the one that he loved, and he only had two children by her. Joseph, who he thinks is dead, and now Benjamin. Benjamin is the last thing of Rachel that he has to hold on to. So the last thing he wants is for something to happen to Benjamin. But Judah speaks up and takes responsibility. Notice what Judah says in verses 8 through 9. Judah said to his father Israel, "Send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, as well as you and our little ones. I surely will be surety for him. You may hold me responsible for him if I do not bring him back to you and set him before you. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame before you forever." So Judah is taking responsibility of the situation. He says, "Put it all on me. I will bring him back. And if I don't, you can blame me. You can put it all on me forever. You can go to your grave blaming me for the loss of Benjamin." Therefore, they pack up, they gather the money, twice as much money to pay for the grain they were given last time, and gifts for Joseph, and they make their way. In verses 16 through 25, we see they arrive, and Joseph, as we see in verse 16, is excited to see Benjamin, so much so that he prepares a meal, a big lunch for all of them to enjoy. Now notice verses 17 through 18. Notice what they're worried about. Being invited into Joseph's home, they assume they're in trouble. They're worried they're going to be accused of stealing the grain they received, and so they're worried about being slaves. How ironic. But we nonetheless see that they were treated respectfully. They're given food for their donkeys. They're getting to enjoy a meal. They're given water to clean their feet. Everything is going well. And in verses 26 through 30, Joseph presents himself and they bow before him, further fulfilling the dreams that he had. And he subtly probes them for information concerning his father, making sure things are going well. And then he sees Benjamin, his full-blooded brother, the brother whom he loves, the brother whom likely never did anything wrong to him. And again, he cannot control himself. He leaves the room to sort of put his face together, to get his emotions under control so he can keep this plot going to make sure Benjamin and his father are being treated appropriately. Now notice what happens in verses 33 and 35. He really freaks them out because he sits them in order of their birthright and according to their age. There's no way this foreigner should know it, yet he does. But focus on verse 34. This is extremely important. It says, he took portions to them from his own table, but Benjamin's portion was five times as much as theirs. So they feasted and drank freely with him. Now, remember what happened in the story of Joseph, and remember the favoritism he enjoyed. Why is he giving Benjamin more than all the other brothers? Perhaps it's genuine love for his brother. Maybe he's just happy to see him and wants to give him a gift. But it seems, because he has been testing them thus far, that this is also a test. Remember who was the last one shown favoritism? Joseph. And remember what happened to him. He was sold into slavery because his brothers were so jealous. Perhaps he's giving Benjamin special treatment to see how they react, to make sure Benjamin is being treated appropriately. So this is another test, but nothing unusual happens, so maybe this is a good sign to Joseph to let him know that things are well at home, or as well as they can be. Now let's go to Genesis chapter 44. Joseph is going to give them one final test, and this one's going to be far more intense. His brothers probably feel pretty good right now because everything has gone according to plan. They got the food that they wanted. They got Benjamin. Simeon is also returned to him, and they're heading back home, and they were wined and dined in the process. So everything went well. But as we see in chapter 44, verse 2, Joseph has his silver cup placed in Benjamin's bag, and he does this to make sure he can accuse them of stealing. And they leave and they go on their way, and the men of Joseph overtake them. Now, they accuse them of stealing from their master, but notice how they respond in verse 9. With whomever of your servants it is found, let him die, and we will all be my Lord's slaves. They feel pretty confident because they didn't steal anything, and they didn't. You know, why would they think Joseph's silver cup would end up in one of their bags? And with full confidence, they say, you know, let the person die and we'll be your slaves. They're not worried about it at all. And so they go through the bags to make sure it's not there. And where is the silver cup found? In the bag of Benjamin. This is the worst possible thing that can happen with them. Any other of the other brothers could have gone missing, but not Benjamin. And because of this, as we see in verse 13, they tear their clothes because they realize it's over. Because of this, their father will die. At least that is what they're thinking. And they return to Joseph. Now, remember the last time there was an issue with the younger brother. They had the mindset that it was better to cut their losses, to get rid of the one causing all their problems. Seems now they're seeking to defend the youngest. Or read with me verse 16. Judah says, what can we say to my Lord? What can we speak? How can we justify ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. Behold, we are my Lord's slaves, both we and the one who is in possession of the cup that has been found. Now, the steward has already told them they're free to go. They're just going to punish the one who stole the cup. But now Judah is offering everyone to suffer alongside his brother. But notice what Joseph is doing in verse 17. He says, "Far be it from me to do this. The man in whose possession the cup has been found, he shall be my slave. As for you, you may go in peace." Now, what is Joseph doing right here? He's not a sociopath. He's not trying to play mind games with everyone. He has a specific purpose in mind. What he has done in this entire scenario is recreated the events that happened 22 years ago. Remember, Joseph was one of the youngest. Benjamin is the youngest. Joseph was the favorite. Benjamin is now the favorite. Joseph was shown favoritism, and now Benjamin is being shown favoritism. And now he gives them the same dilemma they had 22 years ago in Genesis chapter 37. They had a problem with one of their brothers, and they had the choice. Put up with it, try to deal with the situation, or get rid of him. What do? They got rid of him, and that person was Joseph. And now they have the same exact dilemma with Benjamin. All they have to do is say, okay, you can keep Benjamin and go home, and they can continue with their lives. The same, very similar to what they did with Joseph. They also got rid of him by giving him over to slavery. But they don't want to do that anymore. They've learned their lesson. And Judah captures their hearts in verses 20 and 22. Read with me verses 20 and 22. Judah says, "We said to my Lord, we have an old father and a little child of his old age. Now his father is dead, so he is alone. So he alone is left of his mother, and his father loves him." Jump down to verse 22. "But we said to my Lord, the lad cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die." Now jump down to verse 30 through 34. "Now therefore, when I come to your servant, my father, and the lad is not with us, since his life is bound up in the lad's life, when he sees that the lad is not with us, he will die. Thus your servants will bring the gray hair of your servant, our father, down to Sheol in sorrow. For your servant became surety for the lad to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then let me bear the blame before my father forever. Now therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad, a slave to my lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me, for fear that I may see the evil that would overtake my father?" Now, remember what we have learned from Judah thus far. Remember, it was 22 years ago in Genesis chapter 37. It was him who made the suggestion to sell Benjamin into slavery. It was him who made the suggestion and convinced them to do what now Joseph is trying to do to Benjamin. And as we learn from this morning, he has not shown himself to be a righteous individual. Once upon a time, he was extremely jealous over the youngest of his family, so much so that he got rid of him. And it was him who made the suggestion. He was the one who ignored the pain that it would cause his father. He was the one who, as we saw today, desired to put his own feelings and his own desires over what his family needed. He married a Canaanite woman, intermingling a blessed line with a cursed line. He made poor decisions concerning his daughter-in-law. Judah has not lived the life a man of God should, but look how he's acting now. Notice the attitude he has toward his brother. He is now putting his family first. He's ignoring his own desires, what would be convenient for him, and he is putting the needs of his own family first. The needs of the favorite child, a position he once despised. The needs of his father, whom he once ignored. And now he offers himself as a slave to appease this foreigner, the very thing he had caused to fall upon Joseph 22 years ago. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to start with Genesis 38 this morning, so we could see the journey of Judah and how far he grew as an individual. And Joseph knew it. And notice how he reacts. It completely breaks his heart. Let's read chapter 45, verses 1 through 5. Then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. And he cried, "Have everyone go out from me." So there was no man with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. He wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. And then Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. They were shocked. They did not expect to see him. Typically, slaves like Joseph do not climb these ranks. Look at verses 4 and 5. Then Joseph said to his fathers, "Please come to me closer." And they came to him closer. And he said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Now do not be grieved or angry with yourself, because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life." 22 years of bottled up emotion are poured out at this event. And this emotion is not of anger or bitterness, though we could understand if it was, but it is of joy and love and relief, knowing that his brothers have changed so much in 22 years. Once upon a time, they were the kind of brothers that were willing to get rid of the youngest if it benefited them. Now they were willing to sacrifice themselves. And he cries so much that the household of Pharaoh, likely being close by, hears of his tears. And he forgives them, choosing rather to focus on the blessings of God's providence than the terrible things he experienced in Egypt. As he says later in Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, "As for you," talking about his brothers, "you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result and to preserve many people alive." In a story where everything has gone wrong, everything now finally goes right. And because of this event, and because of God's providence working in the background of Joseph's life through a series of 22 years of trials, now Joseph and his family is protected. As we see in Genesis 46:28, Pharaoh, because he loves Joseph, gives the family of Jacob land in the country of Egypt. In fact, a land that is so good that they will stay there for the next, I believe, 200 years or so. In fact, they do not leave until Moses saves the Israelites. And because of this, we see that the family of Abraham is now taken care of and provided for. Joseph is finally reunited with his father, and the Egypt and the land of Egypt and the surrounding nations are saved through these events. And yet, in light of everything his brothers did, he had no ill feelings toward them. He chose to focus on the blessings that came from this event instead of the horrible things he suffered. Now, we have learned a lot from the story of Joseph, and there is so much to learn. And I hate how I had to skip around the way I did, because there's just so much content. But I would challenge you sometime this week, read the story of Joseph. Read the rest of the book of Genesis, because it is such a good and heartwarming book. And there are so many things, unfortunately, we did not get to touch on. So I hope you'll read those things in your own time. But we have learned a lot in the story of Joseph. We've learned in Genesis chapter 37 to avoid things like jealousy and favoritism, because we saw how they negatively affected the family of Jacob and how they eroded the bonds of brotherhood. We saw the discipline of doing the right thing even when there was no hope or way of escape, especially in the life of Joseph when he served as a slave and as a prisoner. And we learned about the discipline of doing the right thing in the life of Joseph when finally he was made one of the most powerful men in Egypt, second only to Pharaoh, of how when everything was good in his life, he still attributed everything he had to God. And now we learn even more. And one of the things we can learn, especially from this chapter, is that God's providence takes time. Now, people are usually not naturally patient. When we have difficulties in our lives, we want to pray about it and hope that God fixes it tomorrow, or at least next week. But sometimes it's not always that simple, because God in our lives today, he works through providence. And the decisions he makes not only affects those, but it affects everyone around us. And in light of that, he works through the puzzle pieces of our reality, putting together a good result. And we see that very clearly with the story of Joseph. All these things needed to perfectly fall into place to bring about this result. And when it was accomplished, it was worth it. Even though 22 of those years meant slavery and imprisonment for Joseph. And he knew that and he appreciated that. And so we need to keep that in mind. When we're facing anything in our lives, even if it's a period of a long time, we have to keep in mind that some of God's greatest plans take time. We also need to consider the heart of Joseph. And he had a heart that I'm not sure I have yet. Consider his perspective on the working of God. He was able to see it all before him. Maybe not in the moment, but later, looking back on all that God had done, he had so much appreciate for what God had done for his life. God was able to take a father's favoritism, the jealousy of his brothers, the business practices of the Ishmaelites, the money of Potiphar, the lies of Potiphar's wife, the Egyptian prison system, the anger of Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh and his cupbearer, and 7 years of prosperity and 7 years of famine to bring all this about and to reunite the family of Joseph, a result which in the process saved Egypt and thousands of other people. And God did this all throughout a period of 22 years. And Joseph was able to focus on the good things that God had done for him in his life. It's very difficult for us not to focus on the difficult things, the inconvenient things, the things that cause us great pain. But Joseph knew that what God was able to bring about through his suffering was well worth it. And I think that's an attitude we need to have. And this is definitely an attitude we should all seek to have. And I also encourage you that sometime this week, continue the story of Joseph. Go back and read the chapters because we skipped around. We didn't get to cover everything. There's so much there that we still can learn. So I encourage you to do that in your own time. But before we conclude tonight, if there is anyone who is here who is not a Christian, who believes that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and is willing to repent of their sins and desires to put Christ on in baptism, we would love to assist you with that. And if you're online and you're watching and you would like to respond to the gospel, make sure to comment and we will get with you shortly so we can assist you with your spiritual needs. And if you're here today and you have any prayer requests, perhaps there's some sin in your life you would like us to pray about, God would certainly forgive you and help you in your journey. Or if you have any other prayers of encouragement or prayers of strength, we know God is willing to listen. If there's anything tonight we can do for you spiritually, please come forward as we stand and sing.